we see what was up your sleeve? Did you use it, or?
I don't know. What's up yours?
Jason Leisure is kicking Matt Eberflus's ass.
I don't know if I really look at it that way, Jay.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at The Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
You are right about miserable Jason Leisure. He joins us now.
I feel like Stu Gatz doesn't really like this segment.
I think you're great. I think you're miserable.
It might be the one thing that you and I have in common is that we both don't like this segment.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
You want to believe that they're telling you the truth and what they're saying is straightforward, but that, of course, isn't how it works here.
Jason Leisure.
The logic of that call with the game on the line to give it to an offensive lineman, that you're on board with that.
It's a one-yard play. It's a one-yard play, and we felt that a big guy like that taking a dive could do that.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Yeah, there are a lot of questions to discuss when it comes to the Bears and what happened to them in D.C. on Sunday.
I'm sitting at home, and I'm listening to Eberflus post-game, and I hear our guy Jason Leisure, who's here in the studio with us, hear him saying it like, because it was the second question on the Doug Kramer play, and his question was really a statement like the logic. You're on board with the logic. I'm just double checking.
Yep,
I felt you on that.
I want that on record, man. As well, you should want that on record.
I want you to tell me and everyone else that you think that's a good idea. Because, I mean, you did tell us kind of by your inaction at the time, but I want you to say that.
He told you then, and he told you again the next morning that he thought it was like, look, we got some plays, and that's when we like the wedge blocking.
Yeah, I bet you that's not in the call sheet ever again. I bet it's not. Just a guess.
See, it's a crime, isn't
say
it?
Say what you want, but I'm not going to run it again.
Here's why I think it's a crime. And I didn't realize we were going to start here, but here we are. The whole idea of God's play, and you know this, Jason, is to show a team that you are a badass, that you are full of like masculinity, full of power, that you will just run it over them when they know you're going to run it.
Yep.
And this is why Olin loves it. This is why we loved it, why we embraced it, because you're showing them you can't stop us. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're going to do. And it helps an offensive line believe in itself, helps a team believe in itself, all of that. Mm-hmm. And that's why we all loved it when they started doing it, when they couldn't run the ball over the first 3 games.
But you can do it without giving Doug the ball.
That's the point, is that Shane Waldron like copped to doing God's play and to running it because the team wanted it and they needed it. And then he subverts the entire ethos of it, the entire thought process of it, by being overly freaking cute with it in that moment.
I couldn't be more annoyed by it. And it's not Shane Waldron, if you're listening. This is not all of Chicago playing the result. Bad idea, even if it worked. Terrible idea.
Yes.
With the game on the line. Great idea if you're up 35 or something, you want to do something like that. That's cool.
I actually looked at it. William the Refrigerator Perry's 6 carries in 1985, they all came with a lead.
Yeah.
Every single one of them. One of them was in a 44-0 win in Dallas. One was a touchdown to make it 20-0 over Atlanta. In the Super Bowl, it was to make it 44-3 over the Pats. Not one when the team was trailing, because you don't do this.
Trailing in the fourth quarter. And maybe your last chance in the red zone.
On the road!
On the road.
It was
insane.
Maddening. And it's, okay, they lost on a crazy play. And you might do everything right, and that you still lose on that kind of play. There are just things you cannot control. But man, did they miss 1,000 opportunities to help their odds, including on that play. I mean, 7 more points. If you're up 10, when Jaden Daniels is running around back there, then what's that Hail Mary going to do for them? It's baffling to me, especially on this roster. Ryan Poles must have been sitting up in his seat thinking like, oh no, I've given you so many better ideas than this. Look at all the guys. This, you remember when Cole Kmet was playing fullback at some point? Because like, who else is going to do it? But if you got a goal line carry, mm-hmm. you got Roschon Johnson, you got DeAndre Swift, you've got the option.
You have DeAndre Swift having a great day.
You get the option to throw. Throwing, every possible throwing idea, I would say, is better than this, especially with a mobile quarterback. I mean, man, do I love having Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Kyler Murray, Justin Fields on a fourth and short or third and short, because mm-hmm. it opens up every possibility. There's been so much money spent and so much accomplished, proven talent put together here, that there were so many better options in that situation.
There's a little bit of breaking news on the Bears on the injury front, and just get this from the Bears. Bill Murray has been placed on injured reserve.
Oof.
They have signed Austin Pleasant to the practice squad, and long snapper Jake McQuaid has been released.
Okay, so Scott Daly, healthy enough to be your long snapper.
It would seem.
So Bill Murray, which Bill Murray is this? This is what about Bob Bill Murray?
No, he was released a long time ago.
Oh, okay. So this is lost in translation, Bill Murray. But either way.
Nate Davis survives.
Wasn't what about Bob Bill Murray committed? He wasn't released. He was committed, I think.
That's a good point.
I watched that movie when I was a kid. My mom liked that movie, and we watched that movie, and it's like this silly movie. And then I watched it again as an adult, and I'm like, oh, this movie's crazy.
Yeah. It's a wacky one.
I was like, let me turn this on. I don't know if you do this with your son, Matt, but like, let me turn on some movie that I watched when I was a kid, like The Mighty Ducks or What About Bob?
Sure.
Or Rookie of the Year.
You did it recently.
Or whatever. But let me put it on and make sure, because I'm careful about what I let my kids watch. Let me give it a run through first and see how, because things were different. Standards were different.
Let me recommend against Step Brothers for your 12-year-old son. It's not a...
Even like the TNT version?
No, I could do that one.
Even if there's a fire.
Yeah.
I love that movie so much.
I love it too, but oh boy.
I realized that's in my comedy bag. Anytime you have an adult acting very childishly, if you have a 40 or 50-year-old man acting like he's 12, that's always funny to me. That always works for me.
Like Tyreek Stevenson.
Well, before we get to Tyreek Stevenson, and you wrote about it in the Sun-Times today.
I love that you mentioned that at the end of the last segment, because this is one of the funny things to me is like, I get texts all the time from people asking me, what do I think about the Bears or what do I think about it? Like, I write it out, hundreds of words.
Welcome to our world.
I put it in a thing that's there for everybody. What do you mean, what do I think about how the game ended? That's what I did Sunday. That was my whole thing. I come on here, and once a week I'm on with The Score with Lawrence and Matt, and I talk about it. Like, if you want me to text you that?
When people text me or that, I want to send them a link. Is that rude to send a friend a listen
link
live?
Yes, it is rude.
Yeah, I don't do
it's rude. It's better to sit here and talk behind their backs on the air like I am now.
I agree.
Go ahead.
Be passive aggressive about it.
Please.
But before we talk about Sunday more in depth, I'd love to know what your reporter nose tells you when you hear that tomorrow's practice is now closed, is now a walkthrough. What do you think of that?
I'm not super on alert about that. They actually have done that before. And you're getting toward the midway part of the season. You don't need to have the guys practice every single day. I don't think that is in response to something. I wouldn't be surprised if that was already planned.
Maybe, but the timing of it does seem suspicious to me. Like, I look at that and I say, a lot of guys have talked over the last 48 hours. A lot of guys have said some truths that maybe the Bears didn't want to get out. Maybe they want to get all of their ducks in a row by having a little close, all-team thing, get together, and then hopefully have a great walkthrough for practice.
Yeah, I get what you're saying, but it's not like we get to watch practice anyway. I mean, we watch stretching and individual drills. It's the same every day. It probably would be the same tomorrow anyway. I mean, and I don't think that means – now, it'd be more interesting if – that means that we don't have open locker room tomorrow, but I don't think that's the case. I'm pretty sure we do as of now.
Yeah, it's a big day tomorrow. You know, Matt Eberflus tomorrow has a chance to possibly change his tune on the accountability of the last two plays. And he's got a chance to talk about Tyreek Stevenson and what he might do. We have our expectations. We have our hopes. What do you think? Do you think Matt Eberflus stays locked in to where he's been in the last two times he's spoken to the media?
That's a test of the Matt Eberflus PR makeover. I mean, we'll see. This has not gone well previously with Claypool or the Denver loss or whatever else. It's, you know, it's always been there. What you want in these situations is the head coach to get up there and convey that they see what you see. What I don't want to hear tomorrow and what nobody wants to hear tomorrow is this same old, it's not as bad as it looks, guys. Trust us. It's not, for 40 years I've been hearing that. Like, and that's not all 40 years Matt Eberflus's fault, only the last three. But don't come out here and tell people it wasn't as bad as they thought it was. Nobody wants to hear that. So, like, acknowledge the problems and then convey the authority that you are going to take care of those problems. And those two elements have frequently been missing from these, if you want to call them, Matt Eberflus apology press conferences or whatever.
Yeah, I'm trying. I think that's well said, Jason. I'm trying to remember, and not to put you on the spot, but you just mentioned a couple specifics. Do you remember him coming out and suddenly being accountable for something that he was not in previous years? I'm thinking about the play where David Njoku from Cleveland was covered by a D lineman. You had the probe, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And like,
Justin Jones, I think.
Yeah, I think it was Justin Jones. You're exactly right. So there's that. There's the Denver loss. There's all these different games. Has he pointed a thumb? Has he stood up there and pointed a thumb? Because the players and I think the fans are desperate to think of him as a guy who can do that.
Yeah, but if you look at him right now and we're halfway through year three, tell me what Matt Eberflus has proven conclusively to you that he's good at. He's a good defensive play caller. He absolutely is. I would not short him on that. Very good defense. Not perfect. Nobody is. But very good defensive play caller. All right. There's one. Like, what's number two?
I think he's good at maintaining relationships with players. But I don't know if that necessarily translates to him being able to coach the players, if that makes any sense.
It does, because I think he's the good cop. And, you know, he appears to be the good cop. He appears to be the player's coach. And we don't, and so that would fit what you're saying, Lawrence. Like, he does get along with the players, but like, whatever choices he's made on Tyreek Stevenson, for him to feel empowered to still be this guy and to let it get to that point, that is a failure of leadership to allow this guy in the middle of year two to think that that's okay.
Yeah, I'm more concerned with the offense right now and Matt Eberflus's apparent lack of interjecting in that and taking control of that. And he needs to understand, as he has needed to understand from day one, it does not matter that you've spent your whole career coaching defense. Now you're in the top job. You will get fired if this defense is good, but the offense keeps costing you games. You will get fired as a defensive coach for bad offense. That's what being a head coach is.
Yeah, it's the truth. What do you expect will happen with Tyreek Stevenson?
That he'll play. I think it hurts that they're down Kyler Gordon. Now, they're loaded at corner. If everybody's healthy and you're looking, I have never heard a football coach, every football coach I've ever talked to has said, we can't get enough corners. We don't have enough corners. They actually might. They're pretty stacked at corner. They've got six that can play. But if you look across their starting corners, Lawrence, including Kyler Gordon, I mean, who's the weak link? Who's the guy that's always being thrown at anyway? It's Tyreek Stevenson, and he's playing fine. But if you're looking at some of their guys in the secondary that were all kind of brought in around the same time, Kyler Gordon will get a second contract. I think Jaquan Brisker gets a second contract. Not sure about Tyreek Stevenson just on the field, let alone then some of these other things. I mean, he had a horrible lack of composure earlier in that game.
Yes, he did.
That was a critical penalty that took, if I remember right, took Washington from midfield into scoring range at the 35, 36, something like that. Just couldn't leave well enough alone. Just not focused.
It wasn't even the guy that he was mad
and
at.
Under control.
Like, that's the part where you go, ooh. Like, if you're woofing at a specialist and an offensive lineman comes over, like, you don't have to play Billy Badass in that moment. Yeah,
this is
you
like,
can walk away.
This is like Javon Wims, Anthony Miller type stuff. And the Bears have, for better or worse, prided themselves on not bringing in guys like that. Not bringing in guys that are kind of loose cannon, wild cards. We don't know if they're going to be able to control themselves on the field. And while Tyreek Stevenson would be pretty vulnerable, I think, just on his play, because they've got Terrell Smith and they've got Jalen Jones at his position. Josh Blackwell typically plays the nickel. I still don't think they're going to put themselves down a quality corner going
when they're
into this
already
game.
Missing Kyler, or maybe missing Kyler.
Maybe Warren. You sit him the first drive.
See, that's I think.
And I know that feels like.
No, at least it would feel
milk, legit, but
it would feel like something. They have to do something. I would sit him the whole game. I don't think they're going to do that. You could sit him a half. You could sit him a quarter. You could sit him the first drive. You could sit him the first play. And maybe you bring in your leadership council to give them input on that kind of thing. And you say, look, I got to sit him. Guys, I have to sit him. Let's talk about it. I don't want to hurt you too much, but you said it. Terrell Smith and Jalen Jones can play. They're
going to be starters somewhere someday, Matt.
They just survived without Tyreek Stevenson in England and controlled Trevor Lawrence and the Jags okay. So it's like, I think Tyreek needs consequences. He needs something public. Well, and here, so I hope they get it.
Here's why it's critical to me is if you take this same situation, I'm by the way, just for the record, I'm more upset that Matt Eberflus and his staff didn't notice it and call timeout. And as I heard you play on the Jalen Johnson clip, why not call timeout before that play anyway?
Yes.
What do you think, like, that you're going to give the Commanders time to figure out how to run a Hail Mary? Call timeout. Make sure everyone's on their job. Maybe put in different people. Maybe put in Keenan Allen or something and see what happens.
He said to you guys Monday, that's not even something that he's considered.
Take the timeout. But if you had seen on that same play, if you had seen Kyler Gordon or Jalen Johnson or even Kevin Byard do the same thing that Tyreek Stevenson did, you'd be like, well, that's really out of character. That's really, I'm not here to beat up on Tyreek Stevenson. But if one of those guys did that, you'd say, well, they kind of lost focus. I get it. They assumed the game was over. That's really a big lapse, but man, that's a one-off. Tyreek Stevenson, this is kind of part of his makeup, is being a little too juiced up and not focused enough. And that's what makes sending a real message, like what you're talking about, Matt, it really important this week.
The timeout thing bothers me too. And now we're kind of getting into the weeds on whether or not defensive players should ever be able to call timeout. They had three of them.
They ended the game with three of them.
They ended the game with
three
timeouts.
They could have used one on the Kramer play.
And I'm with you on some fury with you didn't notice it. Because what else were you looking at? Like, if you're Matt Eberflus, what else were you looking at that you didn't see one of your players, even though he's 60 yards away, you didn't see one of your players having his back to the line of scrimmage before the play starts?
Uh-huh.
Like, that to me is...
It's insane.
Someone has to see that. If that's Eberflus, who it should be, but maybe it's not. Maybe it's Eric Washington going, guys, we got to burn a timeout.
Let's get a timeout.
I don't know what Tyreek's doing, but he's not doing what we coached him to do right now. Let's get a timeout here.
I actually think this line of questioning is not in the weeds. It is important. And I mean, I know there's a lot to get to tomorrow with the Flus, but the idea that a defensive player is allowed technically to call a timeout, but has not been empowered to do so, is connected to the fact that your head coach is not thinking like that. For whatever reason, he's just not. Like, he sees the corners not playing up on that second to last play after Caleb points it out. And you can see on film, Matt Eberflus is using the left arm and calling the corners to come up. If you notice that, call a timeout right then and have them come up.
And it's bizarro world, because usually I'm sitting there like, oh my goodness, why are they taking a timeout 2 minutes into the half or something? Aren't they going to need that later?
Yeah.
Instead, they use none in this situation. And again, we're talking about a play that it literally bounced Washington's way. And you could do everything perfectly on that play and still lose the same way. But it was critical. As you piece together the pieces of this investigation, which is what this always is with them, whether it's Eddie Pinheiro's missed field goal against the Chargers how many years ago or whatever, or what I heard a little bit about some of it, but not all of it, but I heard that part, or whatever. Tyreek Stevenson not doing the right thing, running in there like Leroy Jenkins trying to knock the ball down,
yes,
completely messed up everything.
Jalen Johnson said if Tyreek was locked in, there's 0% chance that play gets completed.
That's not true.
That's Jalen's
thought. But it would help.
Well, because what he's
saying, Kevin Byard's telling you, I didn't get a clean jump at the ball,
yes,
and it's my job. Well, why didn't he get a clean jump at the ball? Because
and
85, the guy Tyreek's responsible for,
shoves him in the back.
And then after the tip, Tyreek is supposed to be in position precisely to stop what ended up happening.
Yes.
And maybe he still wouldn't. Maybe the ball bounces over his head. Maybe it doesn't work out. It's a very unpredictable and random play. But man, did you do some things to increase the odds of it happening for Washington.
Why don't we talk a little offense in the next segment? Because I know that Spiegs really still is very angry at Shane Waldron for a lot of stuff. And we will pick the brain of Jason Leisure about all of that stuff. Everything Bears with our guy Jason Leisure from the Sun-Times. We take a quick timeout and then we're back. Spiegel and Holmes here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
If you touch my drums, I will stab you in the neck with a knife.
Yeah, it's the drums. And then he touches the drums, and it's the part of his body he touches the drums with. In Step Brothers, there's that. And it's just, there's a lot of, I mean, there's good scenes and stuff. But even my son was turning to me, Lawrence. Ruben was turning to me going, Dad, are you sure we should be watching this? And I was like, no. As a matter of fact, I'm not.
Is this appropriate for me?
You know what it was? He was a player coaching up me, the head coach. You know, as a head coach, I have not done a good job in that moment, but I'd built a culture where the player called me out on it. And is this working? Is this analogy working?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Right. I showed my kids the bunk bed scene and they were like, that's hilarious. Cause you know, physical comedy, man
sure.
falls down.
One scene at
Look
a time.
Look at the man fall down. And then they were like, oh, can we watch the rest of it? And I was like, no.
But the answer is no.
That movie would get vetoed in like the first 90 seconds, that conversation between
Should have been.
John C. Reilly and yep. Richard Jenkins.
Yeah. This segment with Jason Leisure is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. Let's talk offense for a second. Because it's weird. Because there were so many things that happened inside of this game, we haven't really gone through what we ordinarily go through when we do a Bears game with Caleb Williams. What do you think the reason is that after a successful game in London, a bye week, that they then found themselves in the mud a little bit as an offense to start that game off?
You saw a regression. You saw Shane Waldron. You saw the offensive line, Caleb Williams. I mean, you saw it go backward, and it looked a lot like it did in week two Houston to me, or week three Indy. I mean, not even as productive yardage-wise as that. And what are you supposed to draw from that? What you're supposed to draw from that is that everything works against these terrible teams, like Carolina, these terrible defenses, especially Carolina, the Rams, and the Jaguars, some of the worst defenses in the league. Then you face a mid-level average defense, but with a really good defensive-minded head coach in Dan Quinn. And you just revert right back. And the hard part for me, the challenge as a reporter and as for you guys as hosts, for anyone that's watching the Bears, is objectively, Caleb Williams was really bad in that game. And at the times when Caleb Williams is really bad, you have to discern how much of that is on him. Mm-hmm. How much of it is a Caleb Williams problem versus how much of it is a Shane Waldron, Matt Eberflus problem, or how much of it is an offensive line personnel, Ryan Poles problem.
It's that's definitely true. That's football.
It's very difficult.
That's analyzing football.
Well, because he's
difficult.
Unknown. Yeah, if you brought a proven good quarterback in here and you see these things going on, then you'd kind of know, because we know what that guy is. Mm-hmm. We don't really know what Caleb Williams is yet.
Well, but we've seen so much to come to believe it, and then it did look like regression. It definitely had that feel of like, oh, so all the people have been telling me, yeah, they haven't played anybody. That's right. Okay, yeah, they're right. It had that feel at first. I don't want to believe that necessarily. Here's a question. Lawrence did a good job of pointing out some of the Dan Quinn stuff, where he's bringing up the linebackers with that mug look, with the two A-gap blitzes that it looks like they're going to do, but they're dropping back in zone. Meanwhile, there's a guy trailing the man in motion.
So everything in Caleb's brain is going, man, man,
right?
They're in man.
And so he switches the play, because he switches the play a lot. And we have talked about it as a very good thing. But boy, it was happening a lot. And then it would result sometimes in him being in trouble. So I wonder if he is, in that game, falling prey to some of those defensive gimmickry and checking into things that end up not actually being beneficial.
Yeah, and it's going to happen with any rookie quarterback. And Dan Quinn, I mean, it's got to hurt you as a Bears fan to watch Dan Quinn over there, because when you chose Matt Eberflus over Dan Quinn a couple years ago, there's nothing in Matt Eberflus's resume that stacks up better than Dan Quinn's. They both have been in the league about the same amount. They both have been in coaching, I should say, about the same time. They're about the same age. Dan Quinn, far more accomplished, far more respected as a defensive mind.
And as a head coach.
And a leader.
And like somebody like that is going to have a lot of good ideas to show a rookie quarterback, even a really good rookie quarterback.
And then there's all the pre-snap penalties. The Bears have the third most pre-snap penalties on offense in the NFL. 26 of them. It's an average of 3.71 per game, which is actually second most in the NFL. There's that moment there where third and two became third and 12 when they had two
illegal formation and then false start.
Formation and then a false start. And we were told earlier on in the season that those false starts are on Caleb. We were told by quarterbacks that the false start is on Caleb in some ways because he's got to be firm with the cadence and have the line under control. And that's a lot to put on a rookie quarterback, but it goes back to your point. How much of the disarray on offense is Waldron and how much of it is Caleb?
Yeah, and you could expect some of that early on. That is something that should have been outgrown by now. By midway through the season, you shouldn't still just accept that as, oh, that's just part of the deal with a rookie quarterback.
All right, but my real problem, Lawrence, I'm on fire on the offense. Is he just too damn cute, Shane Waldron? Does he believe, obviously the Kramer play, but there was other stuff. The back-to-back quarterback draws say, oh, I know you stopped there, but now you're not going to stop this one. I mean, there were other instances, too, where he seems to be obsessed with being, oh, look at me, look at my fancy plays.
Sunday he was. And you think back, when you see the Doug Kramer play, for example, that's the epitome of what you're talking about. And it makes me think back to that, was it a 4th-and-1 close to the goal line or a 4th-and-goal with a yard to go in Indy where he calls for the option play that loses 12?
Yeah.
And I could just picture, I'm not reporting that this happened, I'm just picturing this. I picture Matt Eberflus going into his office the next day and saying, like, no more of that. That's it. You just call a normal offense. Listen to me. Call a normal offense. Stop it. And then for 3 weeks, that's what you get because against these bad teams. And then all of the, I don't know if it was the bye week or that the idea of, oh, we're facing a better defense, but I guess you'd have to call it creativity begrudgingly comes back out and not in a good way.
What an interesting point of view, because we do talk about the concept of the self scout, and maybe with the extra time, that's one of those things where they're sitting there going, you know what we could do against these guys? we could, they'll never see this coming.
Yeah. And who does this sound like?
Matt Nagy.
Exactly.
Like we could do this instead of, and the beauty of what had happened between, like, if we go with your fan fiction on this.
Yes, thank you. That is what it is. That is not a report.
The beauty of it is, oh, all right, yeah, that makes sense. Well, hey, we got this guy that we always dress, but we don't use him. And our fullback's either hurt or we're not sure if we want to keep him on the roster. We could use that guy as a fullback. Like, that seems pretty normal to do that. And then you do it. And it works. And coaches sometimes can't stop themselves. And they go, okay, since we've built this into the offense,
sure.
Now I got to build a counter because people are going to know that if we line up Doug Kramer, that you just follow him to the ball. So what if we just gave the ball to Doug Kramer?
Well, we knew that that was built in as soon as we saw it. We knew that was going to come, and that's why we talked to the mini fridge about it, because eventually maybe it would come, but it's not supposed to come when you're down 5.
On the road.
On the road in the fourth quarter.
Definitely not for the first time. Let's not test it out.
No.
Let's not give it a whirl then.
Bill Barnwell ran the numbers. Did you see this? Bill Barnwell ran the numbers of every single touchdown on Pro Football Reference and could not find once a 300-pound or more player who had a touchdown while his team was trailing. Not once. It's never happened in all the touchdown data on Pro Football Reference that a 300-pound guy, a lineman of any kind or anybody back there, was given the ball and scored a touchdown while trailing. Never once.
I'm with Lawrence on deciding to train and use Doug Kramer as the lead blocker, fullback, and the power. That's clever. That's like coming up with something. I like that. Mm-hmm. Giving him the ball with the game on the line is a totally different story. And you have Matt Eberflus, his logic, if we can go back to this. Like I'm sorry, but this is really troubling. Matt Eberflus never gives thought to vetoing this. With three timeouts in hand, he thinks, he's told us this, he is thinking, he didn't say it exactly this way, but to paraphrase and to read between the lines of what he's saying, he's thinking, Lawrence, worst case scenario, they stop Doug Kramer. He can't barrel through to the goal line. And we go for it again on fourth down. That's still pretty serious consequence for this play. If it, not, let's just say he doesn't fumble, but they stop him and you got to go again on a do or die fourth down. Why don't we try two plays with the guys that are good at this?
Yes.
Olin Cruz talks about it all the time. Don't talk to me about plays. Talk to me about players. Mm-hmm. When you got to have it, who are the players that you're going to trust? In short yardage this year, Roschon Johnson has been reliable in those moments. You trust Keenan Allen, and you saw what Keenan Allen did to draw a pass interference penalty on a fade route. It was a good ball by Caleb Williams,
too. I thought
too.
So, too. Yeah.
Like there, you have DJ Moore. If you wanted to give the ball to DJ Moore on an end-around on that play, I would have been fine with it because he's one of your best players.
Instead, you're giving it to a guy who's never had a carry in the pros or in college.
And to not think, and
or maybe ever.
I brought it up that all you have to do is when that play comes through your headset and you hear it, guys, I want to give it to Roschon here. That's all the head coach has to say. And then they can change that play. If he hears the call while the team is in the huddle.
Whoa.
Guys, I want to give it to Roschon here.
Yeah, timeout, reset.
Even if you can do it without the timeout, but for sure, sure. You can use the timeout to go, what are we doing here? Let's give the ball to the players and let them do what they're used to doing in this situation.
We'd bitch about the timeout, but then we'd be everybody would forget it if you scored the touchdown.
Those are two critical elements of the head coaching job. Those are two things where you separate yourself from being just a very good defensive coordinator to being a head coach. It's one, knowing what is going on with the offense, and two, being able to make decisions in a tight time frame with the game on the line.
Last thing, Jason, this concept that Jalen Johnson shared about not stopping practice to repeat a play and get it right is, are there teams in the league that do that where they will just like, all right, let's just complete the play and then we'll look at it and film together and just kind of talk about it? Or is it commonplace to actually stop a play and try to freaking get it right?
You only have so much time. You are limited on time by the CBA on how much practice time you can have. So if you want to sit there and do like it would be in Remember the Titans and they're going to run the same play 99 times till they get it perfect. Okay, but then there's 98 other plays you can't work on. What struck me about that comment by Jalen Johnson, Matt, is DJ Moore just told us last week that's one of the improvements they've made is that they have been stopping plays that are wrong and redoing them. Well, now you have somebody else telling you that's not what happens in practice. And again, it's all of it is similar to an investigation. You're asking Matt Eberflus for answers, you're not getting them. So you start asking everybody else and you start to get some interesting pieces of answers that all start to form your picture of what's going on.
Some very interesting points of view for sure. Jason, thanks for coming down and hanging out with us. It's much appreciated.
I love it. I love being here.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, we'll make it so that you can be here as often as you'd like.
Great.
That'd be good, I think.
Yeah, why see the family? Hang out with us instead. You know what
the
I
kids
mean?
Are in school. What am I supposed to be doing during the day on a Tuesday?
That's a good
Just
point.
Sitting home waiting for them?
Maybe making them dinner? Jason, you ever think about that?
I make dinner. I cook in our house.
All right, good.
I love to cook.
Thank you, sir.
When we come back, maybe you should promote this one.
Let me tell you, Lawrence, outrage from that game on Sunday has reached the heavens. Okay,
there are
celestial levels of outrage from that game on Sunday. We'll get to it next on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
First of all, congratulations. You know, it's nice to have a couple new faces at The Score and not just kidding.
Afternoons on The Score.
The quarterback stunk. The offensive line stunk. Special teams stunk. Defense stunk. The running game stunk. The coaches stunk.
Oh, man. Our dear friend, the late, great Doug Buffone, Would have been really fun to hear what Doug thought of that thing.
Or maybe not. Maybe not for the Bears. I think for every listener, it would have been a hell of a ride. Could you imagine someone like explaining to Doug what Twitter is and then being like, hey, Doug, there's a video of a shot that we didn't have on TV of Tyreek Stevenson over there with his back turned to the line of scrimmage.
Well, sometimes, Lawrence, a game is so maddening and rage is so vast that it reaches the heavens. And sometimes our old friend Doug is roused to share his anger and his thoughts on a horrific Bears law. Doug, is that you?
We are live from Six Heavenly and SixHeavenlyTheScore.com. I'm your host, Doug Buffon, up here running around with a Ron Santo who's been clicking his heels all week because he's as mad as I am.
Wait a minute. Santo has heels up there. Oh my
You
God.
Get your legs back when you get up here. That's not the point, boys.
What is the point?
I've had it. I could kick a tomato can down a grocery aisle and pick it up before the Bears finds a win at the end of that game.
Hit the bull in the ass with a banjo.
I don't even understand.
Oh, you couldn't hit it. If it was stapled to your hand, you couldn't hit it. And I'm most mad. I'm mad at the coaching. Okay? Uh-huh. Like a nice woman at Blackjack's Gentleman's Club, it starts at the top. All right? You start with the top. And I've had with the Eber fluke or whatever. You grow hair on your face, you grow hair on your head. I know where you need some hair, okay?
Where does he need hair? What are you talking about?
He needs a word. It matters. And they need to drop the way that ball should have dropped to the ground. I'm hot, okay? You want to lose? I've lost. I have my teeth kicked in a dead-end dirt road for 10 years. I'm not mad about losing. I'm mad about not taking someone down with you. You say 13 yards don't matter. 13 yards. It turned me up if I'm wrong, OB. 13 yards is about 40 feet. Okay? That's half a bowling lane. You don't think it matters?
You know what
else is 40 feet long? A T-Rex. Okay? And I wouldn't mind if Eberflus wants to go sit in the portage on and we'll let the T-Rex run up on him like they did in the movie.
What?
When you saw Tyreek Stevenson with his back towards the line of scrimmage, how'd that make you feel?
Okay, Steven Town, Stephenville kid, whatever, his Steven Center, Convention Center guy, I don't care. He's out here waving around like a T-ball player picking dandelions. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to come down there this week. I'm going to dig up Chris Conte from whatever Circuit City he's managing, and I'm going to get him back out on this field.
We did
run into somebody. He's out here thinking he's at a Dodgers game in the World Series, tapping a beach ball up in the air so everybody's happy and they don't get there till the fifth inning.
Is this as embarrassing as a Bears loss as ever been, Doug? You think? I mean, it's pretty damn embarrassing, right?
I mean, it's bad. It's bad. Okay, a double doink. That's a fluke. Okay. This is incompetence. And if people want to go, oh, 55 got held. I know a little something about 55 getting held. It was usually outside of hangups around 2:30 in the morning from a flight attendant. And I'll tell you, that was a big deal then too, okay?
I mean, wait, so you got held outside of a hangups, like 55?
I've been held outside of a hangups, okay, and I'm the one who put the lock on the coat check door at Gibson's. We're not here to talk about who's done what and who's done what where. This is about the Bears embarrassing themselves. When you hand a ball off to the fat guy, you don't trust the fat guy. That's like giving a hot dog to a dog to a poodle and say, here, watch this for a second. You're gonna drop it.
Yeah, you wouldn't trust the poodle with the hot dog, right?
Let's go to the black psychic on old Route 66 in Lyons.
Wait, he's taking calls. We didn't say you could take calls.
We got Don on the 355. We're gonna go to you after we talk to Big Jim in Villa Park.
What would you like to see happen this week?
Oh my God. Well, first of all, I got a couple of things I'm doing up here. People think it's the government. No, we control the weather up here, okay?
Oh, you do?
It all happens up here. What I'd like to see, bring everybody in, sit around and say, we screwed it up. And then go say that out of the camera, trying to act like things aren't even matter. It's okay, guys. We'll get them. Now you got them this week. How many? We got two more games here against people that don't already have better records than we do. Do you want to go out there to the Cardinals, pretend you're a 14-year-old with a BB gun, and get yourself a burb?
Wait, so tell us more about how you guys control the weather. That means you can make it bear weather anytime you want?
It's a whole committee. It's a whole committee. Stay, somehow Skilling's already got a say on it. He's not even up here. There's a whole committee. I've been telling you, we got to get some bear weather out here, and maybe it won't matter because you're out here playing. One quarter doesn't get you a dollar, okay?
No, it never did.
We got a Mercedes with bald tires that you couldn't park sideways into a Bennigan's if your life depended on it.
Bennigan's? All right, Doug, it's really good to talk to you. It's really good to hear you. We're glad you're doing okay. You know,
Doug Buffon's thoughts on the games are brought to you by Zayers. Come into Zayers this holiday weekend. We'll take care of you. And don't forget to stop by Marshall Fields. We'll go to Marshall Fields. Look in the window. You know what? If you're a Bears player, look in the window and see your own reflection. Who do you want to be?
Thank you, Doug. Oh, God.
Thanks.
Yeah, he's the best. He really is the best. He's very friendly with the stand-up comic Daniel Van Kirk.
Yes, it would seem that those two guys know each other really well.
Exactly.
And that way, they can channel each other almost.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, Doug, he probably does a great Daniel Van Kirk impression.
I'm told that Daniel Van Kirk does a great Doug. Like, you would never even know that it was Daniel Van Kirk.
Oh, I see.
Who was doing it.
That would make sense. That would make sense. All right.
And he knows how to use Twitch, apparently.
He does. He knows how to get on the Twitch.
Which I wouldn't expect that Doug would. But
the fact that Santo was clicking his heels, right?
not good.
You get your legs back. Exciting.
I hope that you had fun with that segment, Speed.
I did. I really did.
Because I don't know how much fun you're going to have in the next one.
Why?
Well, because you've got some thumb pointing to do.
Hey, Eberflus isn't going to do it.
So you're going to do it?
I'm going to do it. I'm going to show you what it is to be an adult and take accountability when you have been wrong. Okay?
Okay. All right. I like that. That's happening next here on The Score.
It's football, mister.